Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This week in the news, we pay homage to Kevin Sullivan and the Lazy River Ice Cold takes on SummerSlam and all of this week's wrestling. And then Invader Club, Chris has given us the Steiners versus the Faces of Fear from Nitro 1997. Almost said 1997 Nitro. It still would have been the same thing. Anywho, I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Jeff. Fancy meeting you here.
Yeah, weird that we planned a Zoom meeting to do a podcast.
I can't believe that. You want to talk wrestling?
I do want to talk wrestling. I kind of want to, shaming's not the right word, but we are part of a network called Voices of Wrestling.
I've heard of them. Good stuff.
Do you realize that a lot of people in Voices of Wrestling just will not give the devil its due? And really hate WWE, like actively make arguments online about why things shouldn't happen and stuff like this. I love the people. I do. I enjoy them.
I even admire the creativity and the criticism, but like challenge yourself to have that same level of creativity in your criticism of other products then.
Well, when you want a product to win, it becomes a problem.
Right. I know. And then refine your criticisms into standards, right?
Yeah.
Like over time, you start to actually refine, certain things that you're like, oh, this would be a good thing in a wrestling show, just generally speaking. These are the things that make a good wrestling show good, the platonic form of it.
It would be wrong of me to call anybody in particular out. It's just one of those things where I've been reading the site this week.
So who am I calling out, Jeff?
No, we shouldn't do that.
No, I'm sick of these cowards hiding in the woodwork. I demand.
Hiding. They are not hiding at all, which is
you
also.
You show cool. Your faces to old Novi, and you face the thunder that is the Nov dog.
But I've got a few like links from people who are a little bit more friendly to it or just like, what are they talking about here? And I kind of go, guys, we are a conglomerate. We're a conglomeration, much like Mark Briscoe would say. We are, our views are varied and trust me, there are a lot of people who don't like Nov and myself. Want to know how I know? I hear about it all the time from the hate listeners. And look at you. You look like a dork on YouTube. You know, those types. Yeah. So, no, it's just been an interesting week with Roman Reigns coming back and all. But yes, let us just get into it, because I have nothing of banter to speak of unless you did.
I mean, not really. Okay. I do have the Spotify here. I finished all the instrumental work for my next 4-song EP. That some of this stuff's been kind of kicking around for years at this point. But like I've done all of the instrumental work. After we get done here, I'm actually going to start tracking vocals, and then hopefully it will be up on Spotify here. And then, why are you laughing? I am putting my heart on the musical recordings. I'm trying to talk about the damn human condition, and you're over there cackling like a hyena, like an ass hyena.
Chris, I'll tell you why, because I'm waiting for the chance to say, I appreciate you taking the opportunity when we're bantering at the top of the show for shameless self-promotion.
Hell yeah. You know what? I write about the human condition. You cackle like an ass hyena, and the hell with it, Jeff.
No,
let's talk about the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan. Fine. Let's do it. You want to talk to Dungeon of Doom? You want to do that?
No, Chris.
Faces of Fear picked out for Vader Club. It's all themed out. We're going to have a lovely show. Or we were going to have a lovely show. You know what?
Chris.
I'm good. You have a good rest of the show here.
No, I was gonna applaud you for it. You just leave on the camera. Oh God, you'll have your chance at your Dungeon of Doom, sir, because that is your wheelhouse, and not mine necessarily. But yes, attention.
I don't like being attacked on this show. I honestly find it annoying. The assaults on me are coming from our website and now coming from my co-host.
No, there's nothing this from the website. Everyone's
attacking me all of a sudden. That's the big news of the week, ladies and gentlemen, is that once again the nerds and the cowards in the media are coming after your boy Novi, and I am besieged on all sides. And the only way to defend against this litany of attacks, these unfair, scurrilous attacks done by cowards with no backbone and no shoes, is to sub up to my Spotify. Shoeless cowards.
What's the link for that?
Just Google Chris Novembrino. Okay. Or no, Spotify Chris Novembrino. Don't Google it. I mean, you can Google Chris Novembrino Spotify.
Okay. I get it.
There's cowards in the media attacking me, Jeff. All right, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, so
this week we lost a legend in the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan, who was, of course, one of the leaders of the Dungeon of Doom alongside Jimmy Hart. Jeff, what are some of your fondest memories of Kevin Sullivan from back in the 80s?
Actually, it's funny you say that. My first memories, I've actually met Kevin Sullivan. I'll tell you that story in a second. Coming in after, he was most famous for pretty much his run in Florida, which, you know, where he's doing the Prince of Darkness gimmick, amidst what is known as the Satanic Panic. And, I've seen a lot of kids who don't know what the Satanic Panic was, and I'm here to tell you, it was, very, very real.
It's a very wild period
in time. In terms of the early 80s. If you were a kid, and especially if you were like me and you grew up in the Bible Belt with the ascension of Ralph Reed and the Moral Majority, parents and churches and society was very worried about kids turning to the dark side. And
Because of things like Judas Priest records.
Judas Priest and Black Sabbath and playing Dungeons and Dragons.
And I feel like this even ripples into later on the assaults on quote-unquote violent video games that happened in the early and mid-90s. It ripples into that. But like it is this whole like weird, unhealthy obsession or like an unhealthy analysis of culture that like one simply listening to a hard rock album would actually change your entire religious beliefs.
Yeah, so I mean, he's most famous for that. My personal recollection was him coming into Crockett circa 87 after all of this. The stuff in Florida with the Prince of Darkness stuff is infamous. Like him coming out of the lake with Mark Lewin as the Purple Haze, and him turning a journalist into Luna Vachon, and of course the Fallen Angel, who would later become Woman, and that stuff. He came into Crockett and he kind of as a tweener a little bit. He was kind of these very weird promos that both called out Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair, so he didn't know what side he was on. And then it turned into the Varsity Club eventually, and from there, you know, he invented the Tower of Doom match, which Michael Hayes stole and took to world class. But that may be a match I ask for you on. It's not a good match, but it's an interesting concept that was only done later in Vince Russo WCW. The stuff that actually I find his best to be is in Georgia, when he's a white meat babyface prelim guy, not unlike a Brad Armstrong or a Tim Horner, and he ends up in this angle with Austin Idol facing the Freebirds. And the Freebirds, basically Austin Idol has a flat tire on the day of the big tag team title match. And so we don't know if he just left Sullivan high and dry or if, you know, it was on purpose. But then, like Michael Hayes goes, it's not my fault that he got four flat tires. And Austin Idol comes out and goes, wait, I never said I had four flats. And then it just became a big type of feud. That stuff is great. I love the Varsity Club stuff because Sullivan is a big sports fan, and so he liked real athletes and stuff. So I always liked, you know, these guys from big major universities who were athletes coming in, and he's kind of doing the satanic coach who has, you know, power over Mike Rotunda and Rick Steiner and Steve Dr. Death Williams and guys like that. After that, interesting enough, my other memories are when he's not in WCW, in between that time, he's the Taskmaster and he's the Prince of Darkness. He is really kind of instrumental in helping both Smoky Mountain and ECW get underway. He's one of those guys who would get cut around like 92-ish or would leave the territory and went over and he helped Cornette. He was his managing, I believe, the Night Stalker, who was Brian, the guy who became Atom Bomb.
Brian Clark.
Brian Clark under a mask. And he'd go to ECW, and he'd team with the Tasmaniac against guys like Bad Company and the Bruise Brothers. On that first Vader Club, when we did the Miguel Perez Jr. and his partner versus the Headhunters, there's a great match with Sullivan and Abdullah the Butcher, I believe. I forgot who they're facing, but it's like a 4.5-star match. We may pick that for Vader Club next week. But no, that was cool. And then eventually he comes back mostly as a Taskmaster for the Dungeon of Doom, kind of being a player coach there. And also on the booking committee quite a bit. And he is really, to me, he might be the most instrumental in the downfall of WCW, if you consider, like, when the Radicals left, a big-time move, because, at least in terms of internet culture, and I can speak to this, there was nobody bigger in internet culture than Chris Benoit, Malenko, Guerrero.
Eddie Guerrero, yeah.
You know, they were your work rate darlings, so to speak, and Sullivan, you know, he books the angle where Nancy Sullivan goes to Chris Benoit during the whole Horseman thing where they're having trouble with the Dungeon of Doom, and then she ends up leaving him for Chris Benoit in real life, and so Sullivan just keeps beating Benoit to the point where they just decide, hey, we want to leave, we don't want any more of this. I mean, and as a Salvi offers to give Benoit the title, but even that's not enough. Mike Graham goes up and ends up threatening them when they're leaving with like a knife and says, if you leave, I'll cut you or something. So they go to human resources and get their release, and they jump to WWE. And after that, everything's a mess in between the two companies. Nobody's happy in WCW, and because they're watching guys who left go on the ascent in WWE. Now, I've watched the Dungeon of Doom stuff and the Alliance to End Hulkamania and things like that. Not my favorite thing in the world. This is kind of when I'm only half watching it. I've got into my early to mid 20s and I'm just like, I got things to do at night and on Saturdays and on Mondays. I'm not watching this junk. But it's your turn for Sullivan remembrances. I figured it'll go into this somehow.
Yeah, I mean, basically my experience with Kevin Sullivan is I just remember tuning into WCW as a pup, and the Dungeon of Doom was sort of your de facto heel stable on Saturday nights and on Nitro too. I was always kind of, I mean, especially because they didn't always explain it. It's just like you turn on the TV one day and you see this guy who looks like Bizarro Hulk Hogan, but like is evil, and you're like confused why this guy is wearing yellow tights and has like red face paint and like hates Hulk Hogan. And they don't really explain it. He kept that going much longer than the actual engagement with Hogan. And it kind of was weird. I mean, I'd certainly associate Kevin Sullivan with the Tree of Woe spot, like whenever I do a Tree of Woe in Virtual Pro Wrestling 2, that's always like in my head, that's the Kevin Sullivan spot. You put him in the Tree of Woe, run in for the knee, like that's a great spot. My creator wrestlers routinely had that in their arsenal. And so that's always been, I think, maybe my strongest remembrance of Kevin Sullivan is
mine is always,
that's his spot.
Yeah, mine is always the thick Boston accent when he says Varsity Club.
and then, of course, the double stomp. The double stomp by Sullivan.
No, I met him in, I believe it was 2011. It was either 2011 or 2012, and I didn't mean to meet him. I went to wrestling reunion, a wrestle reunion. There's a PWG show there with legends and stuff. I remember, I think it was the real main event, or one of the main events, was El Generico and Great Sasuke versus the Young Bucks. It was at one of those airport Westins or something like that, and everybody had their table set up with stuff, and I went to meet a couple friends there, and we go to the bar because I want to watch UVA basketball for a little bit in between shows or before the show or something like that. And Raven and Kevin Sullivan are at a table there having breakfast or drinking or both or something like that. My buddy goes, hey, I'm going to go over. That's Raven and Kevin Sullivan. I want to meet them. I go, oh, that's cool. Whatever. I'll stay here. I'll watch the game or whatever. And so he goes to meet them. And I hear from across the room, hey, Virginia. Let's go Boston College. And I'm just like, is Kevin Sullivan heckling me from across the room? And so, you know, they come back to go do the show. And, you know, hey, good to meet you. You know, you guys aren't looking very good this year, whatever. I think he's an insane better in some ways, but he loved the Celtics. He loved talking like real sports in so many ways. So he just took an opportunity to just trash talk, man. I'm just sitting there going, am I getting heckled by the Prince of Darkness right now? Fun meeting, from what I've heard, just the nicest dude in the world from people who met him. But of course, you know, those are controlled situations. But there's not a lot of people who are trashing Kevin Sullivan or speaking ill of the dead, so to speak. So I would just assume he was very beloved, very creative. You know, really, to me, his other legacy is, in addition to like Raven and The Undertaker, really one of the guys who made dark and spooky kind of work at times. Now, there were times they didn't work. I still, those Dungeon of Doom segments sucked, Chris. I'm sorry.
Oh, they're not. I mean, like, look, they're not a good faction. They're just the one that I was on my television when I was 8.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the worst of WWF and the worst of Paul Jones and whatever Paul Jones is combined.
I just watched a ton of Hugh Morris matches back. You know what I mean? Like that's some of my first memories of watching professional wrestling are just Hugh Morris was the guy doing a moonsault on WCW Saturday Night.
Yeah, no, for me it was the Varsity Club and then also the angle with Jimmy Garvin and Precious where he ends up creating the Tower of Doom match where it's like him, the Russian Assassins, Mike Rotunda, Al Perez, and against, because it was a replacement for the War Games, which they thought had run its course after like 2 or 3 years and he needed to do something different. So it's like three cages on top of each other. And there's a trap door that opens every minute or so and you can possibly escape. I think they were facing Jimmy and Ron Garvin, Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and the Road Warriors. It's an interesting match. I wouldn't say it's a good match. Oh, no, the Russian Assassins are somehow involved in this, too. I think I might have said that, but...
Do we know the nature of the quote-unquote devastating accident that happened to Sullivan at this autograph signing? Because I saw the devastating accident and then autograph signing, and I was like, what could happen in an autograph signing?
I think it might have been on the way to an autograph signing.
Okay, like a car accident on the way. Because they had to do something to save the leg. So that's I was like, geez.
I forgot to read up on
That's all okay. No, I know the whole thing's quite tragic, though. And I mean, one of the things
he may
about
have had a stroke there and just fallen or something to that effect. And something.
Yeah, well, yeah, they had to do something to save the leg that he had, like sepsis and encephalitis that kind of came after that. I mean, it sounds like a horrible final series of months for poor Kevin Sullivan. And it, again, seems like a legendary nice guy. I also see that Ric Flair posted about him in all caps, and so that's lovely.
Taz posted about him. The last thing I remember him doing, and I remember seeing this, was he was in that Karrion Kross promo that brought back both the Authors of Pain and Paul Ellering. He played the priest in that. He's the bald priest who's talking to Karrion Kross that whole time when they form the Last Testament. So they thought that I thought that there might be a few appearances here and there, but it was odd that they didn't put that on TV for SmackDown last night. They had a very nice tribute to him on SmackDown, and mostly went to, you know, the Dungeon of Doom stuff for the most part. But so he's been around recently. He did a few things for MLW as well. But getting into the other news, WWE officially announced that NXT would start on the CW on October 1st with a show at the Allstate Arena in Chicago featuring CM Punk. The WWE release and advertising around Punk only lists live arena special appearances, meaning it's possible he won't be on the television show before a debut show on a new station. It makes sense for him to appear. Even more interesting, they also announced the second show on October 8th, which will go head-to-head with a Dynamite that is being moved that week to Tuesday, would be from the Enterprise Arena in St. Louis, featuring Randy Orton. One would expect that given the show is going against Dynamite, that far more than Orton would be appearing on that one. AEW announced this week that Title Tuesday on October 8th from Spokane, Washington, hasn't been confirmed by AEW the reason for the move, but there will be a division championship baseball series games on October 9th, so that would most likely be the reason. During the baseball playoffs in October, it is likely that all AEW programming will have days when it's moved. So, Chris, we're getting a head-to-head between the new station that NXT is on and Dynamite. The wrestling wars are back, baby.
I gotta tell you, I think the secret weapon for NXT right now in terms of ratings is this Joe Hendry phenomenon. I think the 1-2 punch of having known quantities like Randy Orton and CM Punk, and then Joe Hendry, which I know makes us both giggle when we've talked about like certain aspects of the gimmick that are perplexing. People love it. People love the Joe Hendry meme in the same way that they love "and his name is John Cena." And I mean, you're seeing Joe Hendry stuff posted and clipped into all sorts of things now. And I think that potentially could be still rolling at a pretty high pitch come October, especially if they've got Hendry involved in something. And then to have, like, let's say Joe Hendry and CM Punk alongside each other, those sorts of visuals, that stuff people are going to want to tune in for.
Interesting you say that, because this past week on TNA, we had Wolfgang versus Joe Hendry. Riley Osborne of the No Quarter Catch crew qualified for Ultimate X And even Dante Chen made an appearance.
Riley Osborne is in Chase U, and you know that.
Chase U? Okay. I was mixing him up with the deaf.
Miles Bourne. Miles Bourne. Totally different.
Did not watch. In return, there are rumors that Josh Alexander will be appearing in NXT, which could be very, very interesting, given he is, of course, the former tag team partner in Monster Mafia / the North of your current NXT world champion, Ethan Page. So I am a big fan of Josh Alexander. I would love for them to be actually allies, and then it turns into a title match of some kind.
Yeah. NXT, you want to do? Are we? What else we got in the news?
We got a little bit. We got a little bit more.
Yeah. All right.
I'll get through it, and then we'll get to it. And hold that thought. On August 3rd, the NFL Hall of Fame induction ceremony happened and revolved around Steve McMichael, who had ceremonies simultaneously in Canton, Ohio, and in his home in Homer Glen, Illinois, where friends and family surrounded him. McMichael has been battling ALS and is bedridden, no longer can move or talk and has to be fed, but through a machine can communicate with his wife very clearly on borrowed time, and was known that his lone remaining goal in life was this induction. Yes, it was a very emotional thing. I have become a Steve McMichael apologist of late. I think he was probably 10 years too late in terms of the football aura type thing. We had gotten into the internet work rate stuff where, you know, again, the Benoits and the Malenkos were kings, so people thought, Steve McMichael sucks.
There was a goofy aspect to his locomotion in the ring, Jeff.
Yes, there was, but he was legit tough. I mean,
he was legit tough, but like there was just something kind of goofy about the way his wrestling was actually executed move for move.
Seth Rollins will be taking some time off.
Real quickly, though, I just want to say I'm actually thrilled that the guy got to live to see himself be inducted into the Hall of Fame. I think that's a lovely thing. And yes. I mean, I'm not trying to fade his life accomplishments, especially in football and broadly speaking, just because I thought he was a little goofy in 96.
Oh, if you were my age, the 85 Chicago Bears were the example of defense that everybody wanted to be. I mean, especially when you were playing peewee football at that time. So, like, Steve McMichael was, you know, a legend to me. But getting back to it, Seth Rollins expected to be out sometime. His injury is described as chronic. That is what happens to knees, too, especially if you come back a little bit too early.
Too early, yep.
Mm-hmm. So they had the big angle with Bronson Reed. I'm sure we'll be talking a little bit about that in the Lazy River. True TV will be changing to TNT Sports during primetime hours starting in October. I am expecting to take a victory lap when other AEW programming other than Dynamite is moved there. That's all I got for that. Anything on that, Chris, or can I move on to our last thing here?
Let's move on to our last thing.
Wrestling purists reporting that both Penta El Cerro Miro and Phoenix won't be signing new contracts when their current deal is expired, and they are expected to go to the WWE. This should not be a shock to anybody. Penta is 40, and he's been doing sports entertainment for the last 3 years.
Pentagon has been a cover band of Pentagon. I mean... Go and watch the stuff he was doing in his late 20s in Lucha Underground and his early 30s in Lucha Underground and tell me that it hasn't slowed down. This is a guy who it's like watching his matches from back then on Dailymotion at like 0.8 speed. This is not the same guy. I think what he needs to do, and he knows what he needs to do here, is gimmicky stuff, the ooky spooky stuff, Pentagon versus Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt Six as some sort of tormentor against them. Pentagon versus the, not the Judgment Day, but the final Testament. I mean, he needs to be a spooky, ooky act.
I think he's going to get over
huge. Lots of smoke, lots of mirror. I think so, too.
Glove thing, the chant, yep. His face on a T-shirt, and just that for WWE. Phoenix has trademarked a few other names such as Rey Fuego amongst others. He's going to be an interesting case because they're going to immediately want to put him in a ladder match, and he's had some injuries And then when he comes back, they'll also put him in a ladder match to make sure that he's not injured. If they bring them in as a quote unquote tag team and he's injured, Penta may be put on the shelf. There's always that fear. The other fear is they just have a lot of luchador adjacent gimmicks right now in the main roster. They may be in NXT for a while.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, right now, especially given the dynamics of NXT, having Penta debut as a babyface and having a main event angle against Ethan Page is not a bad place to start him off.
It's going to be a while. I don't know when the contracts run out. It's just been said that Conan's been in their ear and that Penta had wanted to jump. And so who knows if they'll be on AEW before that, but wanted to just report that in case you go, hey, where's the Lucha Brothers around? So there's that'll do it for the news. Now to the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched, where we had time for this week. Starting with, if you'd like, Ice Cold takes on SummerSlam. I thought the show overall had good wrestling. I felt it was a little overbooked. It just felt like every match had an interference angle or something to that effect. And I kind of just got... So nothing really felt special up until Roman Reigns made his return in the main event. Spoilers if you haven't watched SmackDown or this, but I'm sure you've probably heard of that. But it's like I liked the Dom angle. I really enjoyed LA Knight and Logan Paul more than I ever thought I would. I thought that
right up until Machine Gun Kelly pulls out. Yeah, right. Like the finish on that. This is another good example
lame.
Of like lame, stupid.
And there was a lot of that kind of, you know, it's kind of like, okay, here's, I mean, the only thing that was clean as a whistle was that Braun Breaker, Sami Zayn match, which is as close to a squash, I think, as you can possibly get.
And that was a poor match. That was not a good match. That was like, I believe in my head, it was about 5 minutes. I was going to say 6 minutes. It was 5 minutes and 40 seconds. And it was a lousy match for a rematch that was supposed to have increased stakes. What they delivered there, I thought, was inferior by a considerable margin to any other encounters that they've had, including TV encounters. I was really disappointed by Braun Breaker versus Sami Zayn.
Jacob Fatu injuring himself in the ending angle with the return of Roman Reigns. I haven't seen an update on his condition. He's in a walking boot right now. Hurt his ankle on that. Bayley and Nia, I thought, was a good match. The ending again with Tiffany, you know, it's just like, okay, here's another one where, you know, it's not going to be a pure ending here. And then Gunther and Damian Priest was fantastic. And, you know, I'll.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
I'll allow the, I mean, the entire night was about the breakup of the Judgment Day.
So. Right. I mean, it was
a story show. That match was fantastic, I thought.
And I also think that paying off the story at SummerSlam is something that they've earned narratively, okay, because people love the Judgment Day angle. People, you know, I mean, the WWE's fans are 100% invested in the Judgment Day. So I don't feel like all the narrative stuff around the Judgment Day was unnecessary. It for me, it's the gimmicking of the LA Knight match, the gimmicking of the Nia Jax match, even the Drew McIntyre and CM Punk match with Seth Rollins got, like, the drama with Seth Rollins got tedious for me.
Yes, with the bracelet and stuff. And oh, he's gonna be, yeah. You know, it's weird because I want these big pay-per-views to be the end of angles, and then and unfortunately in modern day wrestling it feels like, we're gonna finish it, but we're gonna tell you what the next angle is, as opposed, yes, to waiting for the next television, and it drives me nuts at times. That Punk, I enjoyed it for the most part, don't get me wrong, but then it just got to be like, God, will somebody just punch Seth already?
I know. I Seth becomes unlikable in a completely different way than Punk, just because it's like this character is huffing his own farts as the referee.
Yes, he's chewing scenery. He should just be sitting there watching them beat each other up with like a smirk.
And yeah, he should be really like even clapping at points. Like they should both get annoyed that Seth is amused by them just beating the crap out of each other.
So out of everything, what was your favorite thing? Doesn't have to be a match. It could have been an angle, but on SummerSlam.
Oh, God, my favorite thing has to be all the Judgment Day stuff. I'm completely into the story. I thought
the Dom stuff was particularly well executed in terms of the, hey, you don't want to hit Liv with a chair because you'll get disqualified. And I thought the way that they plotted that, where it's like, he's not really interested. And then of course the final, I think they could have even held off on the reveal until Monday.
I know. Could have just had him like sort of seemingly lovingly sabotage her. And then finally have it revealed that it wasn't a loving sabotage at all. Like, to your point, I think they rushed the beat,
yes,
a little bit. Yeah, you could have revealed the big coup d'etat and the big reorientation of the Judgment Day until later. I mean, I really enjoyed the Gunther and Damian Priest match. Those, yes, guys worked their asses off.
They smacked the hell out of each other.
Gunther flies around. Like, I mean, he's so large as a human. And, like, I mean, he...
After losing the weight, he's now almost become like a bump machine.
Yeah, he propels himself around.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, some of that's Priest doing the work, too. But Gunther's definitely pushing himself off the ground impressively. The verticality in that match was excellent.
And the follow-up, yeah, Raw was a lot of fun too.
I agree.
I thought that was a solid wrestling show in terms of, I mean, look, it's 3 hours. Not everything's gonna work, but for the most part, I mean, the injury angle with Bronson Reed, I thought was very well done. Made him look like a beast again. We'll see what happens with that. The reintroduction of Odyssey Jones, even if I'm not the biggest fan of Odyssey Jones, I thought it worked well.
Boy, I thought that worked great. I thought it was a wonderful debut, yes, of him. And then I thought that Kofi, Odyssey, and Xavier have excellent on-screen chemistry with one another.
I hope they're not doing what I think they're going to do here, but I think they're going to do it, unfortunately.
What? Odyssey is actually Woods, part of the Final Testament?
No, Woods is going to turn and finally start listening to Karrion Kross, I think.
Yeah.
And then
I know.
The
I don't
Wyatt
really
Six
want
thing
that.
Didn't offend me at all. I thought Joe Gacy is a very good babyface.
He is. I think the whole thing about them thinking that they're the various characters from the Funhouse is strange. I don't, yes, know how I really feel about that. But I thought the match itself was good, had all the feels. We've already talked about it, so I'm not going to like repeat content on, like, I thought that Gable and the Creeds were a bad debut match for this. I mean, if anything,
I
would have had just like three kind of or lesser known heels. I mean, even bring them up from NXT or whatever.
Local talent. Just
trapped, you know, trapped. I mean, bring up Gallus. I mean, this is a perfect opportunity, you know, to just have Gallus. They're out here like, we don't like these internet guys with their videotapes. Who likes VHS anymore? And then Joe Coffey, like, flops his mustache.
I feel like we're unnecessarily burying Gallus. Well, I do like Gallus quite a bit. I agree. It's just like, they are here to lose a lot.
And they now have, like, the generic elder millennial character that has become elder millennial slash Gen Xer slash now the character we're just going to give every around 40 something, which is what's up with these kids today? these kids today and their posts.
That's my gimmick.
Right. I can't stand the posts.
You know what really
grinds
today. My gears?
Yeah. Posting. Why are the kids doing it?
I'll throw it to you to talk about something next.
Okay. Wesley turning heel is stupid.
Yes.
And it's very, very, very stupid and short-sighted. And I would like to rant on this for a couple of minutes, if I might.
You may.
Okay. So I think it's established, if you've listened to the show before, that there's just something about the Rascals that fundamentally rubs me the wrong way, whether it's Zach Wentz's Dane Cook energy or Dante what's-his-face just having a very punchable what's-his-face. Like, there's something about these guys that rubs me the wrong way. And I think it sort of naturally leads to Wentz and Dante thinking that they're fun and funny and being the exact opposite and being terribly annoying. Like, it's the most natural character for these guys. They think they're a hoot. They crack themselves up, but nobody else feels that way. Wesley, however, has established equity with this fan base. People like Wesley. He has had enough matches where he has been the scrappy underdog, where the fans legitimately, earnestly like and are rooting for Wesley. Wesley is like 5'5" or 5'6" as well. He does not actually fit casting for a heel very well. He doesn't have a heel look about him. And if you think about the roster right now, you got Obafemi, you have Ethan Page. These are your two singles champions. Obafemi, I think, is a heel. He's like sort of like a dominant tweener with more heelish twinges. But, you know, it's a little bit oblique. But does Wesley beating Obafemi really seem like a thing that like is a chase that we want to see? Or like Obafemi like losing, is that the tragedy we want to see? And then once Wesley beats the Rascals, and he will, and he should. He should beat Zach Wentz, and he should beat Dante What's-His-Face. Once he does that,
I don't know
where to.
Name, but okay.
Is it? I thought it was Dante.
Did they rename him in WWE? And I'm just not remembering.
I don't remember. What's no? What's I, the,
continue ranting.
What's his name? Am I wrong about this? I don't know.
It is Trey Miguel.
It's Trey Miguel. Okay, so it's not Dante. Trey. Whatever. When they beat Trey, like, you know, and Zach, what then? Where do we go with Wesley? I don't see him. He's not this Mike guy. Why Wes Y is unfortunately not that good of a premise for a heel turn in this case, because it's not like we loved the Rascals. They had a one-time reunion. The one thing I will say about this angle that I thought was really well executed is that leading into it, they gave us the red herring of thinking that Nathan Frazier and Axiom were the ones who were going to not be on the same page and were going to end up splitting. And they ended up doing that tease, I thought, very nicely throughout the match. I thought that little beat in the story was very, very well done. But overall, Wesley's the wrong guy to turn. They tried to zig instead of zag because, yes, we all sort of saw a turn coming. But Wesley should stay a face. He needs to be the sympathetic baby face who was betrayed, not the guy who inexplicably betrays his best friends who came back to support him.
I will agree with you. I think we really wanted to see the Rascals win the tag team titles and have that moment.
I think
you know, do it for about 6 weeks and then maybe do a turn where they turn on Wes, because we know this isn't going to last because they have to go back to TNA. That said, it's also, I know that NXT as the training ground wants to you to have a heel run and a babyface run before you go up to the main roster now. That tends to be part and parcel. But small acrobatic guys need a manager and they need a, how do I put it? I'm trying to hurt you type of offense. And this has been done. I think Leo Rush is kind of an effective small heel who does this. I think on the main roster, Carmelo Hayes is that guy. I don't think we need another one because I think both Leo Rush and Carmelo Hayes are better than Wes Lee.
At least at that. Wes Lee to me is an, yeah, he's an underdog. He's a lovable, scrappy underdog. Like if I was going to book him on WWE television, give him the Rey Mysterio 96 push.
Yes, yes.
This feels- yeah, he wins on Mahi Straw Cradles and small packages. The Hurricane Rot, like, you know, he gets the wins out of nowhere like a 1-2-3 kid. Like, that's Wes Lee.
And instead, he's going to get the cheat to win banana peel stuff now instead of, you know, he's actually an aerial artist type thing.
Or he's going to get aligned with a heavy. I think maybe that's the better move would be, I guess, align him with
this
a heavy.
A
but that
like,
doesn't help build him as a heel or anything.
Yeah, this parallel to me is like turning Roxanne Perez, who never needed to be turned. I appreciate her as a heel, but to me, she is buckets of money as a babyface. And just make her pure. Let there be something pure in wrestling. And it's something that has driven me nuts over the years because we want purity. We want a pure good guy to root for that will never let us down and will never, you know, will never turn their backs on us. That's what we wanted out of Bayley for a lot of years too. It's what we wanted out of Hogan but by the time they turned Hogan, people had turned on Hogan already.
And like that's the right time to turn somebody, right? Yeah, yeah. Like they turned Hogan at the right time.
Turn on Hogan when the audience has become cynical and will no longer root for your good guy, kind of a thing. I agree. I was not a fan of this heel turn. But speaking of what we were talking about before, I loved the squash match with Camille on AEW. I thought that was effective. And that entire segment was pretty cool. I mean, DMD cut a decent promo. Mercedes cut a decent promo. I wish we wouldn't be going into the fourth wall breaking, you were suspended, you took your ball and went home type of stuff that 30% of the audience knows and keep it kayfabe. Well, for Camille, it was an effective debut, I thought, for the most part.
Yeah, I think so. Camille, even in limited outings on the microphone, is not good at that. So the more that they have her just doing these dominant squashes and that sort of thing, I think that's really effective.
Go ahead.
Oro Mensa versus Ethan Page. They really wrote themselves into a weird corner with this story because no one believed that Oro Mensa ever had a chance at winning this title.
Hold on. And did he not win?
No. and it begs, you know, it's like, okay, what do you do to pay off this story? Because the whole story is that he got visual threes on Ethan Page over and over and over again. When we finally get to the match, the visual three he gets is just a foot under the rope spot. He only got one. I think if you're going to do this match, he's got to get at least two or three visual threes. He has to. I don't know that you need to go full breath bump. You got to thread the needle where there's no reason to go back for a rematch, but early in the match, he needs to like get a roll up and Ethan Page is just lucky enough to get his hand under the rope. Like he doesn't get his shoulder up, but Ethan Page gets a hand under the rope and the ref has to break the count. Like and he looks at Oro Mensa kind of like, I'm sorry, that was three with the shoulders under the ground, but he had a, you know, you don't have to have Page dominated, out cold, count out for 10. Sort of thing. But you've got to have more than one of these spots to make this story even worth a damn. And it just really begs the question, like, why put Oro Mensa in this match? This is dumb.
I agree. The entire angle was dumb.
It was dumb.
Because nobody ever believed he had a shot at it. I am going to rail a little bit about AEW and the Kyle Fletcher MJF. Not the match necessarily, but I think we know where this is going. And I don't like it because when plans changed last week, Kyle Fletcher came out and gave a very good fiery babyface promo, I thought. In this match this week, he gave very, very good fiery babyface match. Kind of made himself a star. Sorry about my phone going off. I will turn that off now. But we are now doing all this work. And I hated the ending of the match. Give him a screwdriver. Even Tony Schiavone is saying, use the screwdriver on MJF.
I know.
And then ring and whatever. This is all going to be just to turn Kyle Fletcher back heel against Will.
Yep.
And probably be the job guy again for the Callis family. And I was thinking about this Wednesday night when I was on my other show. And this week, and I'm like, you know, I know Tony loves having finishes in the ring, even if they're screw job and they're shades of WWE or they're every other big match type of screw job heel type thing that we see way too much of.
I'm just begging them to stop turning people.
That too.
I'm begging them.
They should have just had MJF do a count out here. Give him the championship's advantage. Do that because I think people wanted to cheer for Kyle Fletcher. And now, he is now, I mean, my God, they go 2 weeks and they think they need to turn a guy every time because it's like, well, this is where we see him or whatever, and we don't want to push him here or there. And it becomes convoluted, and everybody becomes Paul Orndorff and the Big Show. And you're just like... It's like, no wonder these crowds don't want to come out because they don't know who to cheer for sometimes other than, you know, Bryan Danielson. But even that, you know, sometimes is questionable. But, yeah, I couldn't understand this. I think it was we have this plan and we need to stick to it, but we need to use him in this week as a babyface. I hated this, Chris. I didn't like it at all.
No, I had the same reaction, just like kind of why? Just
yes.
I want people to clearly like, and it's the same thing with like Strickland. I don't know how I feel about this guy anymore. He's just a champion.
Yes, who is kind of a jerk.
Who's a jerk. Right, yeah. Like, you know, I don't
he's self-confident.
Love anybody.
No, he's a jerk.
No, he's not. He's a jerk.
He came out and said, you know, you haven't been a champion. But these two guys have. Before we get more into Swerve, I loved the Jeff Jarrett, Bryan Danielson match.
I like that too.
That was macaroni and cheese for me. Just comfort food. I love Jeff Jarrett. My gripe is it should have been a full show story to explain that Jeff Jarrett was a little put off by how Danielson treated him last week. So he was going to say, I'm giving you everything I got. Be ready. Because the start of that match, I thought, oh my God, have they just turned Jeff Jarrett heel again? And then at the end, they're shaking hands and hugging. I'm just like, well, hold on. He took advantage of the beginning. You need to pay that off. You need to be able to say, oh, he didn't really take advantage of him. He just knew the stipulations and is the old Wily veteran. And they tried to get that over on, they were telling us that, but they didn't necessarily show us that earlier. And it felt like to me, it was just, well, here comes Jeff Jarrett back being a heel type of thing. But the match itself, especially, nobody quite does hardcore like Jeff Jarrett does. I don't know what it is, but I saw a tweet this week where it's like, you know, trash cans in the hands of Jeff Jarrett are like oil paints to Picasso. He's really good at these kind of walk and brawl type things. And I really had a lot of fun watching this.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about that as well. Just that like Jeff Jarrett's brand of hardcore match actually is a very enjoyable version of it, where it's because he comes from like a more traditional background.
Memphis.
He's always thinking about why we're doing this shit.
Yes.
Like it's everything is deliberative and in service of stuff. One of the things that I think is the hallmark of a good wrestler, and actually Ethan Page did this in his match against Oral Mensah, is you tease stuff to get the audience's mind imagining something, and you don't even need to do it at that point. Like Ethan Page teasing a superplex from the top turnbuckle through the table to the outside where Vic and Booker T is, you don't have to actually have that happen. Just having that in the mind heightens the intensity, heightens the drama. Like it allows the audience to go there with you. I thought the Jarrett match, I was with you. Comfort food is a good way of putting it. It was, foregone conclusion. Ricky Steamboat on commentary, a little shaky. Never a mic guy.
He was never a mic guy.
Never a mic guy. Never a mic guy. I know. They're like, we're going to put Ricky on commentary. It's just like, why would you do this? Like,
that's what I was thinking, too. And the moment he spoke, I went, my fears have been realized.
What would you possibly be thinking doing this? You have him come down ringside, and he's standing behind Danielson. That's what you do with Ricky Steamboat.
I thought it was going to be special referee at first, and I thought that would have been good. And you put David Crockett on the mic, maybe, because he's in the area. Just, you know, put a broadcaster out there. I loved the Danielson chair spot on the figure four. I thought that was kind of creative, where he's just whacking Jeff Jarrett's knees.
You know, that's a shoot hold, Jeff. I learned that from Steamboat.
Your turn. Anything else?
Okay. Let's talk about Tana Paxley. I think the time's ready to belt her with the mid-card title. I think the crowd's behind her. I think the work
they
is there.
It. Yeah.
The work is there. She can do it. She's got the audience with her. I think, you know, you got to tweak the crazy character
gimmick
a little.
Gimmick stinks. Gimmick stinks,
but you tweak it a little bit, and everyone's going to be right there with her, and she can deliver the work. I would have double turned Kalani and Tatum. I would have. I'm against
you
Kalani.
You are begging for Kalani heel turn.
No, but this is such a good opportunity. Like Kalani gets annoyed that everyone's behind Tatum Paxley and doesn't understand why they can't appreciate her hard work, drive, and Olympian spirit, and instead they're behind this slightly unhinged, like lunatic athlete who, you know, is all gothed out and wants to play with dolls. It was a great time to turn her, and the crowd was definitely ready for Kalani to lose here. They were completely fine with it. I mean, at the end of the match, it does seem like they turned her. But I think the wrong person went over in this match. I think Tatum's ready to actually have a belt run.
I'll do two quick ones here. First off, if you haven't watched SmackDown, Andrade and Santos Escobar had a hoot of a little sprint there. A lot of interference in it, but man, that match itself was pretty darn fantastic, I thought. I enjoyed Ren Sinclair and Kendall Gray for
you know, that was going to be my next note here. Kendall Gray is good. She's got a lot of potential.
I think my comparison to Tim Horner bears out, and she just needs a little bit of personality here. Dare I say she may get it eventually? Because look, Ren Sinclair is all personality. She has it to boot, and it's perfect for this feud.
Yeah, she's charismatic, but I think Kendall Gray is very good. Kendall Gray is the one who actually should be a no quarter catch.
That's what I was about to say. I think that's where we end up.
Yeah.
I think she ends up turning heel and going in there. She is personality wise as vanilla can be.
But once you put her up
with a heel,
Charlie Dempsey. No, you with Charlie Dempsey as a foil. I think Kendall Gray might actually tease out some personality too. Like you could see them being just these weird prickly couple of grapplers.
If she becomes somebody who wants to use her grappling to hurt people, that would be the choice for me. That would be especially in this women's division full of Sol Rukas and Carly Brights and bright chipper cheerleader types. You have this Kendall Gray who's just, I'm looking to break arms and legs and put you out for a while. You silly cheerleader types. You silly gymnast types. I'm a wrestler. You know, do that kind of gimmick. I think it'd be a lot of fun with Kendall Gray. But are we ready for Vader Club, sir?
Yeah, let's do it.
This was your choice. I will let you do the honors.
So I was digging up Faces of Fear matches because I just wanted to watch Mangan the Barbarian brawl it out. And I was like, Steiner Bros were always fun, and this is late era Steiner Bros, and I do kind of like this weird transitional era of Scott Steiner where he's like leather dude and he's wearing the studded belt and everything. I think he's kind of an interesting wrestler at this point. And this match is just a short one, too. I didn't want to inundate Jeff with a ton of content this week. It is just two meaty tag teams beating the crap out of each other kind of sloppily. I think the it culminates, and this is the part I was showing this to my roommate too, and we rewound it several times just because we were captivated by it. At one point, the Barbarian does a suplex, and Ming is on top getting ready to do a body splash off of this. However, Ming just doesn't effing wait before jumping off the top. And yes. Rick Steiner is rolling out of the suplex, has his shoulders up, and here comes avalanche of Meng onto Rick Steiner between his back and his shoulder. It looked brutal.
If you've ever seen both Power and Glory and FTR do this spot where one guy does a superplex, the other guy does a splash, this is the Faces of Fear doing that.
It's the worst version of it you've ever seen.
It's the worst version of it, and Rick Steiner just has forgotten what he's supposed to be taking this bump, and Ming doesn't care because he's going off anyways.
I went back and watched it. Ming's obviously the problem in this spot.
Yes,
and he knows it too, because right afterwards, he's outside, like he's on the apron, and he's clearly pissed at himself. Like the body language is just like, I just like absolutely botched the hell out of that spot.
Or this match isn't going well, and I'm not having a lot of fun. Look, Meng's always a joy. The Steiners don't care about their opponents as long as you give it back to them. I have said this before on this show. I am a Barbarian fanboy. From 84 on, the first he's one of those guys in Techwood who almost hit the ceiling on his headbutts. I love the thrust kick boot of his. That was always a favorite of mine. I love the Faces of Fear.
I love them. They're just a really fun tag team. And then the other fun thing about this match, which is why I picked this one, actually, instead of the pay-per-view one, is Hall and Nash on commentary. They're funny as hell. I'll tell you what, we need more rules from Scott Hall.
This
would be howling.
This was Bischoff when he had joined the NWO already. And so he's hanging with Hall and Nash, and they're semi-burying both teams because both teams have had to lose to Hall and Nash at this point. And so he's like the studded belt, and what was the he has a comment about like a powerbomb spot or something in here or something. Yeah, Scott Hall is possibly three sheets to the wind.
Yeah, you know, it's Scott Hall is like he's obviously a net liability, but there for me again, it's like kind of this fun Pat McAfee energy where he does say some shit that's really funny.
It's funny, but it's also, I mean,
it's not in service
of the product. Yes,
yeah, no, I agree.
The product versus McAfee.
But we're watching this Invader Club in isolation, so it's not like I'm sitting here going like, well, this is not good for the long-term fate of WCW. I already know that Kevin Sullivan and Vince Russo are doing plenty of work to make sure that this like company is going to go under.
I think for next week, I'll give you the Tower of Doom match. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It is what I would call a brave failure of the NWA going into their WCW period. Tommy Young is fearing for his life on a ladder. That enough should be enough for you. And maybe to solve that, I might give you a Kevin Sullivan match that's actually halfway decent. But at least watch the Tower of Doom match, kids. I'll be sending a link to Chris to watch that. But that'll do it for our show this week. This has been Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. You can follow me at CrepGame13 on Elon Musk's X. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word, on that same platform. Chris is only on one social media platform other than Spotify, which I don't count as a social media platform. It's a music platform.
That's true.
Yes. He is on the Gram, Instagram, at Dr. Nov, D-O-C-T-O-R underscore N-O-V. We are, of course, part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I do another show over on Fight Game Media on Wednesdays called, of all things, the Dynamite Show. Paul Fontaine and myself, we thoroughly deconstruct the week that was AEW and that night's Dynamite, going live on YouTube about 20 minutes after the show goes off the air, drop it in your podcatchers the next morning. Chris, give us your plugs.
Absolutely. So make sure to follow me on Instagram if you're interested in hearing instrumental demos, music that I'm working on. If you want guitar lessons, please message me on Instagram. And of course, go over to Spotify, search for Chris Novembrino. Help me fight the fascist cowards in the media. Let's make them penniless, shoeless, jobless, and loveless by the end of the week. Let's all sub up onto my Spotify. It's the only way we can fight the smear campaign against your boy Novi. Come on.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.